Before we get started with the latest episode of Irish Illustrated's Tracking the Trail, I want to provide a quick disclaimer that Eric Thomas, Tom Loy, and myself recorded this before 2028 three-star quarterback Trey Tagliaferri decommitted from Notre Dame 6 days after its initial announcement. So we don't discuss that here. We'll get to 2028 quarterback recruiting on a future episode, but our resident experts still dive into plenty of pertinent recruiting scoop. So let's get started. Welcome to Irish Illustrated's Tracking the Trail. I'm Drew Mentock, joined as always by Irish Illustrated senior recruiting analyst Eric Thomas and 24/7 Sports and CBS Sports national recruiting analyst Tom Loy. Notre Dame was on fire on the recruiting trail last week. They picked up five new commits between the 2027 and 2028 classes. A few of these were big-time players. Let's start with perhaps the biggest of them all, 24/7 Sports composite five-star offensive lineman Albert Simeon out of Sam Houston High School in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Tom, this is a big commitment. I feel like when I first heard his name, given where he's from, you know, obviously being LSU territory, it didn't seem like there's much of a shot. But how did Notre Dame get this one done over time and land at, you know, another, you know, top 100 blue chipper in this 2027 class?
I mean, if you're looking at all things equal, this makes complete sense. Albert Simeon is an outstanding fit at Notre Dame on and off the field. He checks every box, and then vice versa. Notre Dame, Marcus Freeman, Joe Rudolph, Mike Denbrock, everybody and everything about Notre Dame checks every box for Albert Simeon and his family. So in that part, in that sense, it's not shocking at all that he ended up committing to Notre Dame. But like behind the scenes, they surged at the end. This one was not exactly going to go their way early on. I think when you look back at his recruitment, you have LSU, and most recently it was Texas A&M that was really the team to beat down the stretch. And, you know, kudos to Notre Dame. They kind of hunkered down and stayed relentless. They didn't play the, look, if you want to come here, great. If not, we're going to move on and find somebody different. They were active when they were trying to recruit this kid. They had other commits working on him. They had current players working on him. And in the end, like they realized how important he was to the class, to the school, no question. But what the message they were able to really, really hit home is what Notre Dame can do for him as a player and as a prospect down the road. I mean, everybody wants to call Notre Dame O-line U for good reason. And they landed a good one for all of the right reasons. So financially, yes, Notre Dame paid up, no question about it. There's a couple guys in this class that you are going to pay up for. And just like A&M, they were going to do it the same. So I think when it came down to it, money probably equal. He found the place that he was most comfortable with on and off the field. And, you know, shout out to Notre Dame. They got it done. And Albert Simeon is going to play for the Fighting Irish.
And Eric, I've heard Tim Priester talk about how he likes him maybe as more of an interior player, which with this, you know, having three top 100 offensive tackles in this class, that could Notre Dame certainly has the luxury of moving him sides. But what have you him inside? What have you seen from him on tape that makes you think maybe similarly, or do you think he has a potential future at tackle?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one because he's not as tall as some of the other tackles in this class, but he's still really long. His wingspan's longer than his actual listed size. He moves really well. So there's a lot of sort of like the measurables and intangibles that lend themselves well to being able to kind of man up on the tackle side and handle the speed rushers off the edge. But realistically, when you watch Simeon, I mean, he's just such a physically imposing player, and there's a lot of similarities to the violence level in his game with some of the top end, like interior offensive line guys that have come through Notre Dame in recent years. And given the way the Irish like to run their offense, there's a lot of pulls, there's a lot of different movement along the offensive line to create unique looks and holes. And having someone with that kind of athleticism coming from the guard position, incorporating that level of violence into, you know, being a lead blocker, a road grader, that's something that can only benefit Notre Dame. And when you look at some of the other offensive linemen, I think there's a few other guys that will have a little bit more of a difficult time transitioning to the inside, whereas Simeon's build and the way he plays, I don't think that's a difficult transition for him to stick at the next level. So ultimately, it's a little bit about his ability and what he can bring to the offense. But when you look at the full picture of, hey, Joe Rudolph, he likes to do the mad scientist, get guys cross-training, you know, just find the best five, kind of make it work. Simeon's probably the most versatile piece in this offensive line class. So there's a lot of options for how they want to roll him out. But if you're looking at best five, the interior just seems to be the best opportunity.
And the Irish also snagged another large human being and three-star defensive tackle, Seguin Alexander. Now, he did reclassify, I believe, in April from 2028 to 2027. He was, I think, a top 200, maybe 180 range. Before he reclassified, I believe, Tom, you've reported that he's up to 295. So he's even bigger than what he's listed on. And I feel like he's still a guy that Notre Dame obviously really pushed for. Tom, he's in, I know there's still some questions on Braden Parks, which I think we'll get to later, but why was he somebody Notre Dame wanted in this class even after he moved up a grade?
It's all about the upside and the potential of this kid. Like, yes, we had him slotted, I think, in the 260, 270 range. And then I was told that he weighed in at Notre Dame at 295 pounds. I mean, this kid is a Hulk tank of a man, and he's still gonna need some developmental time. Like the reclass from 20 to 27, he was ready for it, and he's age appropriate. And there's so much to like about this kid down the road. This is a guy that, again, I don't think he's somebody that you, Notre Dame, Clemson, Texas A&M, anybody was necessarily counting on to be an instant, immediate impact kind of guy. But I think Seguin Alexander is a guy that you kind of like shove away for a year, let him continue to clean up the body, add the mass, and just really fine-tune the technique, because he is there. Like I said, he's a grown man, and he's a guy that, we always do the first off the bus type of team when we go to these camps, and he's that guy. So really nice win, because again, like we're talking about an embarrassment of riches along this defensive line and in this class in 20 of 2027 as a whole. So really nice win, because Cal was all over him, A&M was all over him, Clemson was all over him. Georgia Tech, we thought there was a moment where he might just end up staying home and playing for the Yellow Jackets. So again, a kid who bought in the big picture that Notre Dame is all about. Productive kid, had over double digit sacks last fall. So nice get. A lot to like with this kid. But man, I think in about 2 years, you're going to be thinking like, man, remember that big pickup, because it's starting to pay off.
And Eric, with that, Jackson Vaughn's another 2028 player reclassified too. But with Notre Dame's classes, might be the best defensive line class in the country, or certainly up there. How much luxury do they have to maybe take a few younger guys who have really great potential, but also don't? I mean, Notre Dame will obviously have older players playing too, but to even in this class, they don't need to rush them on the field or get them out right away.
Yeah, it's a huge boon, like especially with the 5 for 5 or whatever they're actually calling it, rule passing. Like these are the type of players that offer extreme upside and value, as Lo was saying. Like when you look at Seguin Alexander, like he's extremely productive. He doesn't play in the most competitive, division or league in football in the state of Georgia, but he is like a man amongst boys on tape a lot of the time. And as Tom said, as you see him in person, there's clearly those physical traits, that developmental upside from him, the athletic upside. So for him and guys like Jackson Vaughn, Champ Mons on the other side of the ball, like these are guys where a reclass maybe was a little bit scarier before, because it's like, okay, guys sort of tend to leave a lot in the transfer portal. So are we just bringing them in a year early and they're just going to depart? They don't necessarily want a red shirt. But now a 5 for 5, there's more of a concerted involvement with these guys, right? Like you can make sure they're getting involved earlier and often, even if it's not on the field on Saturdays. You can do a lot more to try and get these guys up to speed and kind of play the game a little bit, because you don't have to worry about redshirt having that conversation or trying to mount any sort of obstacles they may have mentally about not getting on the field right away. There's more of an opportunity. So I think that guys like this, like if you're looking at the reclassification sort of movement for Notre Dame, the biggest thing is ultimately, are they getting more from this first year in the program, learning the ropes, learning the techniques as the coaches want to teach them? There's no priors they have to work around, if you will, and they're learning the system. Is that theoretically better for their development than a traditional senior year of high school? Well, it sounds like Notre Dame and the coaching staff believe, hey, if we get them in here, we can offer them more value for their long term than your traditional senior year away from our level of coaching. So all around, I think that with the opportunities these guys have to extend their careers now with the recent rule changes, these are the type of takes that only add value to a program like Notre Dame, especially when, like Jackson Vaughn, they're borderline top 100.
Yeah, that's a good point on the 5 for 5 rule too coming. I'm sure that will maybe make it a little easier even for guys to reclassify going forward, knowing they're, have an easier decision to make where they can still get on the field. But last year at the start of the week, though, maybe the most anticipated news, that Notre Dame's had recently is a blue chip wide receiver, Julius Jones Jr., of course, the son of legendary Notre Dame running back Julius Jones, committed to the Irish. Tom, I know you've been all over this one. Feels like at a certain point, maybe a few months ago, this could have been trending the other way, but it seems like Notre Dame really mounted a comeback and then never let go over the summer. So I know people felt pretty secure about this, but I still feel like he's the type of legacy wide receiver maybe Notre Dame hasn't done as well with in recent years. So what does it mean to finally get a player like this? I know maybe receiver recruiting isn't as well as Notre Dame's doing on the trail. That's maybe the one spot where they're not haven't been hitting a home run at recently, even if we like players like Devin Fitzgerald now that they're on campus. But Tom, what does this mean for the class to have him in the fold?
Yeah, this is a home run all the way. I mean, I'm one of Julius Jones' biggest fans. I mean, I get it. He's slight in stature. He's not 6'2". He's probably 5'9", 5'10". But man, there is so much to like about this kid. I've seen him a ton on the 7-on-7 circuit this offseason and just so impressed. And what I think I like most about him is that, like, I know Notre Dame is looking for guys that are buttoned up and, mentally strong and understand and student of the game, if you will. And this kid checks every box. I remember being on site for Mark Matthews' commitment, the live five-star pledge that ended up going to Texas A&M, and their teammates, they're good friends. And Julius wasn't practicing at the time, but I'm on the sideline with him and our producer, Clara Sales, who does a lot of great work behind the scenes for us at 24/7 Sports. And we're just kind of chopping it up. And I am watching Julius coach his players up to a way that you would have thought this dude was like a 15-year veteran in the league, and he moved on to having a coaching career. I mean, this kid is so impressive. And, this is why Notre Dame, Oregon, and Miami and many others were pushing so hard to land him, because yes, he's got the tools, he's got the speed, he's an elite pass catcher, he's an elite route runner. There's a lot to like about his game, but it's between the ears, man, that really fires me up about this kid, because he's a guy you bring in and he makes every room and every player in that room better. So Mike Brown made it a point to target him early. I get it, he's a legacy, it's a no-brainer, but they recruited him like he was his own man, not a legacy. And I think that's truly what tipped the scales for Notre Dame. So really, really big pickup, because, man, like I said, I think he's going to be an immediate impact guy for Notre Dame. And it's a huge pickup, because look, they were very much in position to land Sonny Gales, a fellow top or top 247, top 100 receiver, that ended up picking Alabama. I mean, Notre Dame was very close to landing him. In fact, I'm pretty confident in reporting that they essentially turned away that commitment because of the fact that we were talking about the 5 for 5 just a second ago. Like, they expect Faison back after this year, depending on how it goes. And they were only going to take two receiver commitments. That's kind of how it played out. And I get it. Like, I don't necessarily agree with it, because I love Osonni Gales, and I think he's a potential difference maker at the next level. And I mean, you could have had an embarrassment of riches, but I know that was a tough conversation for Notre Dame to have, to kind of essentially say, like, thank you, but we wish you the best to Osonni Gales. Like, what a time, right? When you're passing on an absolute dude for another dude. So, like, I know Notre Dame fans would have loved to have that combination of Jones and Gales, but in the end, you gotta kind of trust Marcus Freeman and those guys to do the right thing. But love Julius Jones, man. What a huge pickup for the Irish.
And also maybe at least a little bit of surprise on the broadcast, but during his announcement, his younger brother Andre Jones, a 2028 safety, also committed during the ceremony. Now he may not get quite the fanfare of his brother Eric, but he's no slouch himself. He's a number 314 prospect according to the composite ranking. So what did the staff see in Andre Jones? Obviously, it helps that his brother was such a high priority, but he's obviously not just a random take as well.
Yeah, I mean, bloodlines aside, when you watch Andre Jones, he's not the biggest safety in the world, but man, does he play physical. He is fearless. He is a big hitter. He's aggressive coming downhill, and there's a quickness to diagnose that I appreciate in young defensive backs. Like, a lot of times you'll see guys who are physically fast, but their feet aren't quite fast locking with their eyes, right? Like, they ID something, there's a stutter step, there's wasted movement, and then they're getting downhill, right? And it's just them trying to figure out, hey, what's my angle here, whatever it is, in real time. You don't see that with Andre. Everything's very quick. It's immediate trigger, it's downhill, it's fast. And when he's in coverage, he looks at home. Like I was reading Tim Priester's film review today about it, and I found myself just sort of nodding in agreement as I read it. But he looks so at home, especially in zone coverage. Like he's very comfortable with the space around him. He's very comfortable with not only his assignment, but pre-snap, he's calling out adjustments and reads like, "Hey, we got a motion on the slot. We saw this on film," and he's, motioning to the corner outside like, "Hey, you got this," whatever it is. But that stuff's all over his film. So there's clearly an understanding of the space around him and kind of how he can be weaponized to, clog up passing lanes and create broken up passes or opportunities for turnovers, whatever it is. So I guess the word for it is just he's a highly instinctive player and he's a really violent player. And that sort of combination, regardless of, the listed size, he might not be the 6'3", 6'4" mutants they got walking around from last cycle, but the play style is something that not only has, just the value as you're watching film, but for Notre Dame's defense, where they like to play with the safeties and bring them downhill a little bit and just create confusing looks. Like he's sort of a perfect chess piece to fit into that role to allow some of the, unique exotic blitzes and whatever else up front and just give a little eye candy.
That's all our questions for segment one or talking points. We'll be right back with segment two, burning up the boards. And we're back with segment two, burning up the boards. Our first question is from NDDan106. Notre Dame's class looks to have a chance to finish in the top three for the second year in a row. Looking at the last cycle and this cycle, where does Notre Dame still need to make improvements? Eric, we'll start with you.
I mean, the low-hanging fruit is at linebacker, right? They brought in a pair of linebackers last year. They're currently sitting at zero commits after two decommitments, although we are heavily expecting Mount Carmel linebacker Roman Igwebuke to choose Notre Dame here later here in July. But that's the area where I think they could use an improvement. And it's less about the players they brought in, because like I think there's plenty of reason to like Thomas Davis and eventually, if he does commit as expected, Roman Igwebuke and Jacoby Clapper. But when you look at those groups and the potential turnover from this offseason, you could stand to have more raw material coming into the program to kind of offset some of that turnover, some of those potential departures. So that's kind of the big one. The other one that jumped out to me is still tight end. And I recognize like Ian Premer has gotten on campus and blown everybody away. He looks like the next great one per John Bryce. And obviously, James Flanagan was there from the year before. So I don't necessarily have doubts that Notre Dame has good underclassmen options at tight end, even including Preston Frizell on that. But realistically, when you look at the tight end room composition, like Ian Premer is a dyed-in-the-wool blue chip pass catcher. James Flanagan is a blocking tight end with serious pass catching upside. Cooper Flanagan is a blocking tight end with pass catching upside. Ty Washington's a blocking tight end with pass catching upside. And Preston Frizell is a developmental receiver at tight end. So as you kind of look at this, if you want to add like another multiple tight end who's going to be, quality can be in there on blocking, but really their value add is as a receiver. That would really flesh out some options for Notre Dame and give them some different looks, especially in like 12 personnel. So that's kind of one where it strikes as it could be an issue. But realistically, if we get, 2 weeks into camp and James Flanagan looks anything even resembling like the explosive player he was as a high schooler in Wisconsin, along with Premer's breakout, that issue sort of falls by the wayside. So those are kind of the two that jump out most to me. But like I said, the tight end one is almost sort of conditioned.
Yeah, I mean, it's linebackers, surely the easy one to throw out. Obviously, you touched on that one. I would say for me, I want to see continued growth when it comes to wide receiver recruiting. I think, like, I'm not a mathematician here and I didn't do the research ahead of time or anything. I'm just kind of now seeing these questions, but I think they probably averaged around like 5'10, 5'11 with the current crop of 2026 signees and 2027 commits. So I want to see, give me a 6'5 guy, mix him in there. I know that Jackson Coleman's pretty big, 6'2, 6'3, depending on who measures him. Looks probably like 6'8 if I was measuring him. But I just feel like these are guys that I want to see some size. Like obviously Monchon Sales, those guys don't grow on trees. Like you don't get those guys year in and year out. They're not easy to find for the guys that Notre Dame wants to recruit, like the actual top tier guys. So I loved the class last year. I made that very clear. Loved Devin Fitzgerald and Caden Finley and Bubba Frazier and Robinson and Faison. Like I love that group that they landed in 2026. And obviously I'm a huge fan of Julius Jones. And then you talk to people at Notre Dame, you talk to Mike Sanford, former OC quarterbacks coach, who's now coaching at Valor Christian. He's raving about Jackson Coleman. So again, really, really good back-to-back classes. I just want to start seeing a little bit of that physical presence, that 6'4", 6'5" guys. I would like to see something like that added to the roster because I think that those are the guys that kind of, shake things up and make defensive coordinators and secondary coaches and defensive backs coaches like kind of freak out a little bit because you can only have so many 5'8", 5'9", 5'10" guys on one field. So again, love what they're doing under Mike Brown. I cannot stress that enough. I'm a huge fan. I just want to see some size sprinkled in.
Yeah, I think Braden Robinson he's listed at 5'7". He could even be a tad shorter than that. Brings that average
I
down.
think I look down at Braden Robinson, and
Yeah.
that is, but that dude can run, dude.
Yes,
Like
yeah.
he makes up for it because he is, whew, man, he is lightning in a bottle. But
Jackrabbit.
Yeah, he definitely brings out an element, but it is not height. Our next question is from Irish 1433. I just want a rundown of all the remaining targets and where do we stand?
This is a pretty simple one for 2027. Braden Parks and Roman Igwebike. And Roman is announcing on July 11th. Notre Dame is the heavy favorites. Braden Parks is a little bit more complicated. And Tom, I know you've been following this one very closely as well. So I know from talking to people over the course of the last few days, there's been a little bit of back and forth about Notre Dame Oregon confidence. It seems like the net of all that is that it feels like it's, again, on a razor's edge, about 50-50. There's not a lot of confidence one way or another. Oregon, of the two programs, seems to have the most confidence of the two at this point. But, I talked with someone on Friday, a national source who's been well connected to, the Parks and extended family for a long time. And he mentioned, like, a family source told me he was still thinking Braden would. The way he put it was do the right thing. We'll see if that happens. It wasn't said with a ton of confidence. It was more phrased as like, that's my latest note. We'll see. So that seems to be where most of the intel is at this point. It's ongoing conversations between Parks, his family, and his circle of trusted folks, whether that's agent, friends we trust, whatever. But it's ongoing conversations. And really what it seems to come down to is Oregon is this shiny, new, exciting thing in the distance. And I don't mean that in any sort of diminutive way. It's just to him, it's new. It's refreshing. It's not what he's known his entire life. And Notre Dame is something that is comfortable but familiar. And so I think the conversation at this point is, what do you want to do with this next chapter in your life? Do you want to go somewhere where you know there's a path to success because you've been engrossed in it? It's comfortable and familiar to you, or do you want to maybe take that risk and jump into something that's new and refreshing and unfamiliar? And so those are natural conversations for a lot of kids when they go off to college. And I think the normalcy of that conversation and kind of the back and forth dynamics have been maybe misrepresented a little bit as more combative than they are. Because I think it's really just an earnest conversation that a lot of college kids have about, hey, as I go on to take this next chapter and take on these next set of experiences that are going to help form who I become, what do I want to do? And that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah, I mean, just to make it very clear and put a bow on it, Braden Parks wants to be at Oregon. Like, I feel very confident reporting that. Now, and again, like you said, like, this isn't disrespectful to Notre Dame, but he is really, really excited about his potential opportunity at both schools. But man, he just fell in love with Oregon, just like all of these kids that Notre Dame is the benefactor for that step on campus, get around Marcus Freeman, and they are like, oh my goodness, this is where I want to be. I'm falling in love. I never really even considered Notre Dame until right now. Let's do this. I feel like Kingston Prior, not to beat a dead horse, but I feel like he had that moment, that moment of like, wow, this is where I want to be. And I get it. I remember the first time I stepped on campus on a tour, and good friend, the late Lou Somogyi, kind of giving me a tour around campus. I run into Tony Alford. He kind of helped show me around a little bit, and I'm just like, I get this. Like, this was my first time here, and yeah, Rudy didn't do it justice. Like, this place is special. And I feel like Braden Parks is so excited about Notre Dame, and I love it. But man, when I get to Oregon, I'm like, yeah, this is a pain to get to. It's really far, but I really, really like it here. I kind of want to like bet on myself and try it and see how it goes. And everybody around him is kind of like, yeah, that's great, but like Notre Dame, right? So we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm currently in the process to give you guys a back behind the scenes look. We will be hosting Roman Igwebike's commitment. I will be hosting that on the CBS Sports College Football YouTube channel on July 11th, trying to figure out if I'm going to be there in person or not. Anybody in Chicago, give me a shout. But I'm trying to kind of double dip my trip there. I contacted Braden Parks and his people, and I thought it'd be cool to kind of do a two in Chicago in the same day, whether it's no matter where they're going, whether it's Notre Dame, whether it's Oregon or Clemson or one of the other finalists for these guys. Like, excited to do that commitment. I'd love to do both in the same day. So I think it'd be a great trip to Chicago, great time of year. So working on that one. Hopefully I can get them both locked in for July 11th. I know Igwebike is ready, and I know Parks is getting really close. I think everybody, including himself, is probably tired of the process. They're ready to go. So going to be interesting to see how it plays out, but tentatively, we'll see if we can lock both those commitments in for that day.
Well, good luck. Hopefully you're able to get those done. Our next question is from Memphis Phil. If you were calling the shots, who would be your top three must gets for the class of 2028? And we'll start with you, Tom.
Oh, I was going to let Eric start this one, but
Oh.
I'll start. That's fine. I'll go with Jalen Adai, a guy like a 24/7 sports darling, son of Joseph Adai. This dude might end up the number one receiver in America. He is unbelievably talented. We just had him a couple months ago at the opening regional in New Orleans. We got him and invited him to the opening finals. And man, did this dude show out in a big, big way. I mean, this is a personal favorite of mine and our director of scouting, Andrew Ivins. I don't think there's a bigger fan of this kid than Ivins across the entire country. So I would absolutely have him up there. I think Lorenzo McMullen Jr., not to just kind of stick with wide receiver, but I think he absolutely loves Notre Dame. Now, Ohio State, Michigan going to make it very challenging, but I would keep an eye on him. I think Notre Dame checks every box for him and vice versa. So I think they're in a really good spot. Personally, I'm a huge, huge fan of Theo Schott. I think he's got an opportunity to skyrocket. I talked to a very respected tight end coach across the country that felt he was probably the best tight end in the entire country in 2028, which, in terms of just a guy that can do it all at a really high level. So kind of surprised me a little bit, but he was a guy that they were raving about. And I'm trying to think of maybe one more I could throw out here. I'm just kind of quickly skimming. Oh, and Asher Ghetto is a guy that, I mean, this is a kid that goes to the bowl school. He is pushing for number one overall player in 2028. He's a defensive lineman out of Jacksonville, but number six overall for us at 24/7 Sports. Man, if you are looking for a premier fit in 2028, it is Asher Ghetto. This kid is an absolute workhorse dog. I see a first round pick in this kid. What an impressive young man to deal with. But man, when the lights come on and he straps in, I mean, we are talking about a menace, a monster on the football field that, again, we probably got some stiff competition from Ohio State, Florida, Miami. I'm trying to think who else. I think Clemson's in play. So there's a lot. It's going to take a lot of money. It's going to take a lot of effort. But this is a kid that would be a huge pickup. And this is a kid that you go all in for. So those are all great fits for Notre Dame. Top priorities. If it was my system and my department, I mean, these are the guys that I'm going all in for.
Awesome. And I also had Jalen Adai on my list, so that's a good shout, Tom. I feel like I'm cheating a little bit when I say this because he's the number one overall player, and all in all realistic possibilities, it seems like he might end up somewhere else. Might. But Amir Sears, the number one player, number one corner in the 2028 class. We saw him at Battle 7-on-7 Miami. He is so fluid in coverage. He has unbelievable ball skills, great instincts. He never, I don't think I saw him waste a single movement the entire weekend. He's just so fluid. It's Travis Hunter-like. Like, he's astounding. And if it was my call, I would throw all the money at Amir Sears. But the other guys I mentioned, Cam McGee, we were just talking about Braden Parks, a Brother Rice defensive lineman. On the edge, Cam McGee, number one edge rusher in the 2028 class. He would also represent a big, big foothold for Notre Dame to get back in the halls of Brother Rice. Like, obviously, that's one of the top programs in Chicago for creating talent with the new look Catholic League out there that's going to be even more competitive. I would think that that's only going to push more cream to the top. So, this is a school where Notre Dame having more of a foothold in Brother Rice and being able to point to these recent, connections, I think that's something that would only benefit them. So, Cam McGee is definitely one that I would have an eye on. Taj Gray, number 40 overall player, number two linebacker, and best friends with our guy Jackson Vaughn. He's another one. He was an Irish Invasion standout last summer. He's like 6'3" and a half. I mean, he's big for linebacker. He's fast. He's aggressive. He knocks the daylights out of people. That's someone who I would definitely want, running and manning the middle of defense there. Those are kind of the three. And then, like I said, Jalen Adai is the other one. He's like Tom mentioned, he's just a fit for Notre Dame. He is fast as all get out. He doesn't look like he's moving that fast on film. And then you see the guys falling 10, 15, 20 yards behind him. It's like, oh, okay, he's scooting. But the ability, the balance after the catch, the ability to just spin out of tackles and get back to, top speed, it's honestly a little bit remarkable. Just how quickly he can go from catch ball to getting rocked to spin out of it and running full speed in like the course of 5 yards. It's pretty astounding.
Taj Gray is a tank, dude. We just had him at the opening finals. That is another one of those grown men. Like, that dude would be an immediate impact guy for Notre Dame. So that would be, I will say, I was a little surprised, just to add on him, when we talked at the opening finals check-in. He really was excited about Ohio State, Auburn, and Miami. So Notre Dame's got some work to do. Like, yeah, obviously they're gonna have Jackson Vaughn just banging the drum, constantly going after him. And we'll see if there's some movement from the kid before his senior season. He's got an entire junior season to play. Maybe he doesn't end up as in New Jersey for his senior season. We'll see if there's something to watch there, which could shake things up even further. But right now, Jackson Vaughn is going to have him on daily recruiting efforts, which is always going to help for Notre Dame. But yeah, Taj Gray. And then, dude, the fact that you brought up Amir Sears fires me up, just in the sense I love the kid. But like, what's the Liam Neeson move taken where the guy's just like, good luck. Yeah, you have no shot. Good effort by Notre Dame, but that's not happening.
Our next question is from LAFL225. It's a long one. You hear a lot of comments about recruiting wanting to stay near home and close to family. When I was 17, I thought my family sucked. Can you think of any recruitment Notre Dame has won or lost specifically because they didn't want drunk Uncle Jerry to come to 7 games a year, or they didn't want mom stepping on campus on Wednesday night? Does this explain any of the Chicago area recruitment losses these past few years? And he wants to note he's not talking about Parks. And I'll just add before you guys answer that as a DePaul alum, this is the excuse for 20 years why the basketball program hasn't been any good. And I don't think there's much validity to it, at least for them. But go ahead, Eric. I know you had some thoughts.
Yeah, I don't have any with a drunk Uncle Jerry specifically, but the ones that came to mind were Jaden Osbury when he was coming out, University Lab right on LSU's campus. Obviously, his father, Gene Osbury, is now what, the athletic director and proper at LSU. I know he was deputy at the time. He wanted something different. He was around LSU his whole life. He had a lot of respect for the university and the program, but ultimately he said, I want to do something different. I want to strike out on my own and do something that's going to advance me as a person and then kind of broaden my horizons a little bit. And I think that for someone like that to step outside of their comfort zone and go a couple thousand miles from home, like that's a pretty big step. And then the other one that came to mind, rest in peace, is Greg Bryant. Obviously he came from a tough situation, and he chose Notre Dame because he wanted something different. He wanted to set an example for where guys could go from where he came from. And he wanted to push his comfort zone and expand his horizons as well. So those were kind of the two that really struck out. As for the Chicagoland one, like I can say, like the big one would be Justin Scott. Obviously he took his talents down to Miami after being damn near a silent commit to Notre Dame. Not quite, but when they got close, that was a little bit different. He and his family talked openly about how distance was a major factor and academics were a major factor, and there was these things. Obviously, Miami's still a great school. They ended up going down there for the opportunity. But I don't know that it's so much an issue in Chicagoland in name. However, I do think there is, I know he says not talk about Parks, but there are situations like Braden Parks where they're a legacy. They're exposed to Notre Dame for a really long time. They have that familiarity and relationship. And sometimes you have that and it gets you excited. And then you see something new and you're like, oh, that's interesting. And there's nothing you can really do except, try to continue to recruit those guys and show maybe why they had that initial interest in Notre Dame. But yeah, I don't know that it's a major factor in the Chicagoland area specifically.
I mean, I don't want to, I'm not going to blast. There's a lot to unpack with this question. What do, I mean, it's like 350 words. I just don't like, I mean, Keon Keeley comes to mind, where like it seemed like he was about as done deal to Notre Dame coming out of high school as possible. And then there was some stuff going on behind the scenes that led him to choosing a different school in Alabama, and then obviously kind of was able to right the ship and come back to Notre Dame years later. So, I mean, there were some people that were anti Notre Dame back there that were, gift wrapping him elsewhere. But I mean, like, without throwing somebody's family under the bus, I think it's a tough question to ask or to answer. So I will say this, like, there's a lot of families that have greatly helped Notre Dame recruiting. I mean, I think of CJ Carr and just thinking about his parents, Tammy and Jason. I mean, everybody in that family was just so pro Notre Dame because of how they recruited him, how much love Tommy Rees showed to that family, how they prioritized him over everybody in the country. I mean, if you guys remember, like, Tommy Rees had Notre Dame is the team to beat for both CJ Carr and Julian Saye in that cycle, which is like, I mean, Tommy Rees could take all the flack he wants from Notre Dame fans for a variety of reasons. But the dude could recruit. He really could recruit and he could evaluate at a really high level. So he was the reason that Notre Dame landed CJ Carr. And the parents were very much on board, pushing hard. Like, we don't necessarily want him to go to Michigan. We want him at Notre Dame. And but I think more often than not, I mean, just kind of thinking about I mean, there's a lot of kids on this roster that the parents were very, very much pro Notre Dame, which is going to help more often than not when it comes to recruits. Because, like, these kids, we talk about Braden Parks potentially looking at the flash and the excitement of like, parents typically are going to, if they're going to play a big role in this decision, they're going to be like, hey, this is great. And we love the uniforms and the colors and the flash and the buzz, but, like, I need you to focus on life after football. Like, Notre Dame has that degree that sets you up way better than some of the others, but it also has the football program to match now. There was a point where it's like you're selling academics first and foremost in the degree. And then, yeah, come here and play football too, and we'll be pretty solid. Well, 8-4 and 8 and things like that doesn't exactly help that. But now they're producing first round picks. They're competing for national championships. You get a national champion caliber degree, and you are set up for life after football. If these kids get hurt or if they don't, it's a good product they're selling right now, and it's nice to see the academics and athletics lining up.
Yeah, and just to highlight what you said, Tom. I mean, CJ Carr is a answer that benefited Notre Dame in the opposite way. Not that he didn't like Michigan, but clearly they were winning national championships. He grew up not very far from campus. Obviously, there's his grandfather and dad played there, and he picked Notre Dame. So it doesn't always work out that way. Our next question is from One Told Alethea. How important is on the field performance for recruiting slash recruit retention? In years past, it felt like a win or two could sway recruits. Get less of that sense now. Not sure if it's a changing recruitment environment or if the change is the program's perception versus prior eras. Thanks, guys.
I mean, I guess I'll start. I would say that I think it's very important. I think, look, I mean, we're looking at a day and age where you're trying to sell what exactly I just talked about, the academics, the athletics, and now you throw the monetary aspect in there as well. And I think in the end, you're going to have a lot of recruitments where the money is going to be even across the board, and player X will just, I mean, player X is going to make $1 million no matter where he goes. So take that out of the equation because you're going to get paid no matter what. Where do you want to be? On and off the field, who do you want to be around? What kind of locker room do you want to be in? What kind of degree do you want? I look at a player right now like Trey Taylor, our number one quarterback in 2027, and committed to Nebraska, could go anywhere he wants in the country. There's still some rumors floating around that he might be talking to Ohio State, and we'll see if they get in play. The kid is going to be finishing up his prep career in Omaha. He wants to be on campus at Nebraska as much as possible. He is the best recruiter that school can have right now outside of Matt Rhule. And they got to win some games though, because if they don't and things go south in Lincoln, Trey Taylor's going to look around because he's got to find the best fit for himself. He's going to take money off the table because everybody's going to pay Trey Taylor no matter where he goes. So he needs to find a place that's going to development. And he has so much trust in Matt Rhule. He has a belief in that program, a belief in that system, a belief in on and off the field, and he's a big fan of everything they're doing in Lincoln. The facilities are top notch, so he has completely bought in to everything at Nebraska. Now they need to return the favor, and they need to win some games, and they need to give Matt Rhule some stability this year. So this is a very important cycle right now, because if they do not win, I'm telling you, Trey Taylor's going to find a better fit for himself, because he's got 3 years. Right? Like, yeah, sure, maybe 4 or 5, but Trey Taylor is a three and done guy and should be off to the NFL as a first round pick somewhere. So If Nebraska, I haven't looked at their schedule, but if they go and they struggle early, every single school in America, whether they have a quarterback or committed or not, is going to be calling Trey Taylor's phone and saying, "Hey, are you ready to like stop playing games? Do you want to come to Columbus? Do you want to come to X school and come play there?" So winning does matter. It's and on-field performance is going to be key for retention. And that's why it's really important to keep winning, depending on who you are. Yeah, I think that the money can be equal, but winning matters.
I think the biggest thing about winning is it's if you're not doing it, it closes doors. If you're winning and you're playing at the level that, recruits assume you're going to be at for these top programs, okay, then it's something that is assumptive and it's not going to necessarily push it over the line for someone. Now, if you make a title run, that's a little different. But let's say Notre Dame makes the playoffs each of the next 3 years. For a lot of these recruits, that's good enough. It's stage, it's platform, it's opportunity. So it's enough to get them interested, but it's not necessarily enough to get them committed. However, say Notre Dame makes the playoffs one out of the next 3 years. Well, then you're looking at something a little different where these guys might think, okay, maybe I'm not going to get that postseason opportunity, those bright light opportunities against top programs to have on my film when it comes time to get drafted. So it's really to make sure doors stay open more than anything. But it's extremely important from that side. And it does up interest. Like back during the fall, like obviously Keeman Spell was a guy that we were all over, and there was a lot of interest in Notre Dame. And a big part of his interest in Notre Dame was the fact that he looked at Jeremiah Love and said, "That's a player that's pretty similar to me. And he has a lot of the tools that I have. And I think I could do a similar thing in that offense." And so you saw it. It was generated interest over time and everything. Now, ultimately, he went a different direction. But part of the main reason that he was so interested in Notre Dame was because of the success they had with players and their on-field performance and him being able to visualize, hey, I fit that. I fit that role. So I think having that sort of secondary bit and look is pretty important for getting these doors open and managing these relationships. But ultimately, I'm not sure that winning is going to win you recruits as much as it's going to make sure you stay in the conversation for them. And then it's up to your skill as a recruiter. Go win.
And our last question is from Mikey311s. Eric, you've previously said 2027 had a generally strong D-line class across the board. What position or positions have that type of strength and depth in 2028 recruiting class?
Yeah, I was looking at the updated rankings on 247 and just kind of going off of even those rankings, the ones that really jump out, quarterback, there are a lot of really good quarterbacks in the 2028 class. Edge rusher is probably the deepest position specifically, not just defensive line overall, but there are a ton of really good, big-bodied, fast edge rushers in the 2028 class. There's a number of really good wide receivers. Now, I don't think there's necessarily like Tom mentioned earlier, Monchon Sales. Like, I don't know if there's that kind of like big bodied, all over, like true elite number one pick caliber guy receiver in this class, but there's a lot of guys who are really, really talented that are in like that 5'11 to 6'1 range. They might not necessarily be your traditional boundary receiver, but they are excellent receiver prospects. And especially in an era where receiver has almost become like we talk about in basketball, Tom, positionless football, if you want to call it that. Like, you can move these guys around and get utility. It's a really good class of receivers. And then corner is also really good in the 2028 class. Now, I think corner is maybe a little bit top heavier than some of these other position groups. It's not as deep as like edge rusher, receiver, quarterback are, up and down the rankings. But I mean, there are some dogs in the cornerback ranks in 2028. So those are kind of the three that really jump out to me. I also am partial to the tight end class, although to be honest, just because Notre Dame hasn't extended a huge wave of offers, I only have a limited familiarity, so I can't necessarily put that out there as the same.
I would, for me, just kind of looking, and I'm kind of more equating this to the guys that Notre Dame's offered, but man, the wide receiver group is incredible in 2028. Bryson Wright is a dog. Jalen Adai, we've talked about him a bunch. And Jet Harrison, look, I mean, he obviously committed to Ohio State. That was about as expected as any in the country. DeAndre Bitton, I do think he's going to likely end up at Oregon with Dakota Grant, maybe stay closer to home and play at Michigan. But I think Notre Dame's got an opportunity here with guys like Jalen Adai, Lorenzo McMullen Jr., kind of going down the list a little bit. Like Tyree Mannings Jr. is as impressive as it gets. Kid out of Venice, Florida, we've seen him dominate. Jeremy Laster Jr. in Hendersonville, Tennessee, we just had him at the opening finals. He was a late add. Not the biggest kid in the world, but man, this dude can run, really high level pass catcher. Dedrick Kimbrough is another one that Notre Dame's very much involved with. Top 247 guy, checks all the boxes. Maddox Wile from Fort Wayne, Northrop kid. Look, Notre Dame's had a ton of success in Fort Wayne, and I think they can keep that continuing with Maddox. I mean, this dude's he's small, I get it, but he is a playmaker. Cut from the same cloth as DJ Tubbs, a guy that I think both those guys are going to end up 4 stars long term. Don't tell Andrew Evans that I'm talking rankings, but I think both those guys could end up 4 stars long term. I think they're both going to have really, really big junior and senior seasons. So, all in all, I mean, a bunch of really good players. I'm trying to think if there was anybody else. Oh, shoot, what's his name? Kellen Miller,
Kellen
kid out of
Miller.
Cass, yeah, out of Cass Tech. I think he's a guy. I forget which of the opening regionals I saw him at. Maybe New Jersey. He was a kid that really impressed me. I think he's a stock up guy that's really impressing a lot of people, and his offer list has started to really take off and match the player, the production, and what we've seen this offseason. So again, kind of an embarrassment of riches, a 2028 receiver, and I think what's really good about it is that Notre Dame's in a good spot. For a lot of these guys, they just need to kind of seal the deal. But nice evaluations by Mike Brown and Mike Denbrock.
And that's all for this edition of Irish Illustrated's Tracking the Trail. Thanks to everyone who tuned in. Eric and Tom, appreciate as always for providing the latest in Notre Dame recruiting. Irish Illustrated subscribers, thanks again for being part of the community. For those who haven't subscribed yet, use the promo code COMMIT65 to save 65% off an annual subscription to Irish Illustrated and read even more about Notre Dame recruiting from Eric and Tom and the rest of our staff. We'll be back next week with two new episodes of Irish Illustrated's Insider Podcast. Those are on Monday and Thursday. We'll also have another episode of the Irish Illustrated Interviews Podcast. It's a pretty entertaining one, so everyone hopefully will want to check that out. And with that, we'll see y'all again soon.